Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I just realized I probably should have rehearsed that, maybe. Instead of just
I think that's good. I think we're good.
Yeah. Trying it cold.
Nailed it.
We do bar mitzvahs.
Even our version just gave me chills,
exactly.
By the way. All right, so we should start this whole thing off. First of all, it is the Snark Awakens. Snark Monkey has been on a bit of hiatus, and this is, I think, a great reason to bring back the group cast, because if you believe all the hype and watch all the advertising, it is the cinematic event of the millennium.
Absolutely, thus far.
Right. We're talking about Sisters, right?
Yes.
We're not talking about Alvin and the Chipmunks?
The Danish girl, I believe.
Yes, Danish girl. Cinematic experience.
We got them all in there. So, before we begin, I think anybody who is listening to this who hasn't seen the movie, the four of us in the room right now, by the way, four white guys.
Yep.
Great.
Exactly.
Nailed it. How big of a nerd fest is this going to be? If you haven't seen the movie, you should probably wait to listen to this until you do, because there will be major. We are going to talk about major plot points. We are going to talk about things that will completely ruin the experience of the film for you. So just know that. Now, before we actually get into that, I do want to tell you about our own Star Wars adventure last night, because it was rife with peril. So I procured tickets weeks ago, as a lot of people did. Didn't it set some sort of ridiculous record the moment it broke Fandango?
Oh, yeah.
Google, probably.
Yeah. Fandango.
Highest Thursday night opening ever in history.
Yeah. I mean, it's just going to be a ridiculous thing. So, got tickets for The Grove in Los Angeles. I immediately regretted it as soon as I bought it, because I was like, oh, the week before Christmas at The Grove, that's just not going to be pretty. But whatever. Yeah, every theater is going to be crowded. It's a Thursday night, which is weird how they say it opens December 18th, but you can go at 7 o'clock on the night before.
Right, yeah, exactly.
I still haven't figured out that.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a soft opening.
So we had a 10:45 screening. Right. And I'm working on the radio, and I got the board op who's going to follow me and run tracks that night. I got her to come in early just in case there was a tough time parking or whatever, right? The first thing she says, where are you guys going to see it? The Grove. Oh, I heard they evacuated. We're like, no, what?
No.
So we're Googling, we're looking at it, and you guys probably saw the story. It was reported at KTLA first. They had an evacuation. Fire alarm was pulled at some point. They stopped all the screenings, put everybody out of the theaters, but eventually realized it was a false alarm, no big deal. But being on edge, as everyone in the world is right now,
yes,
and everyone's probably waiting for somebody to do something stupid. Mm-hmm. The one theater we're going to is the one that gets evacuated. So here's the problem with that. Everybody's back in. They get to see their movie. But by the time we got there, all the screenings were delayed because of that. And you know, with those multiplexes, and I don't know where you guys saw it, but there are many, many showings of this movie going on simultaneously, some in 3D, some in 2D, right? So our screening was supposed to be at 10:45. We could tell everything was delayed. There were a lot of people standing in the hallway. 10:45 turns to 11 o'clock. 11 o'clock turns to 11:15. The 3D showing down the hallway that starts at 11:15 is full and starting.
The
10:45 show has yet to be seated.
Oh, boy.
Everybody gets out of the previous screening. They still won't let you in. The big, giant cleaning cart goes in there, and we're all going, We don't care. We will sit in film.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Let us see the movie. And Alex, fill in at any point.
Alex, how what was the pain in your stomach like? Were you about doubled over?
Oh, yeah. I think I had my first ulcer and hernia at the same time.
Yeah, we were highly frustrated. And I didn't help matters either by doing the joke. Why don't we just go home? And
oh, boy.
I wasn't having it.
Yeah.
The beer was wearing off at that point, too.
He had no sense of humor about that hilarious joke.
Let's just get Wetzel Pretzel and go home.
So, finally, we get seated 45 minutes late, I want to say. I think
no,
it was
a full hour.
It wasn't a full hour?
Okay. We didn't get into the theater until midnight, and it was 10. Yeah.
No. We got in by 11:45 or so. We were about an hour late.
I don't know, dude.
It just felt like midnight.
Everybody gets in there. Everybody's a little frustrated and on edge and making jokes, but people are still relatively jovial. We finally get to sit down and watch this movie. So the manager's there. They get everybody seated. She basically looks up and says, got some... No, this is what we hear. And we're on row N, okay?
Yeah. We got some bathrooms. And terrified.
So the crowd is going, we can't hear you! So finally she
was terrified to speak up, by the way.
She manages to eke out, we're sorry, this screening will not be available in 3D. We're very sorry. You won't need your glasses. Enjoy the show. And she's gone.
She ran. She ran.
So, okay, again, still, we're an hour late.
And everyone took it very well, actually.
And it was
not
like, you know what? Okay, fine. We just want to see the movie.
Right.
All right? So trailers start, and people are even yelling, we don't care about... We will sit in filth and skip the trailers. Just show us the Star Wars.
Yes.
Okay, first sign that something's gone wrong, the trailers are in 3D. Now, normally, you would never see 3D trailers unless you're in a 3D showing, because they have everything computerized and connected, right?
Right.
Am
yes.
I right?
Absolutely.
Sure.
Yeah, exactly.
So we're thinking, okay, well, this is weird. And the biggest laugh of the evening basically was the slide that went up that said, put on your 3D glasses now. And we're like, ha, 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 hilarious. So the movie starts, right? The Lucasfilm comes up. Glimmer, 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 glimmer. Oh. And then a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, and go, oh, this is, the projection's not great. But, you know, it's going to be fine. Da, 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 da. And instead of that thrill I knew I would get when that giant, big moment of John Williams' score hits, all I can think is, wow, those stars are really fuzzy back there. So I put on my 3D glasses, and it just gets worse. And I look over at Alex, and he's like, yay, Star Wars! And I'm like, does it look, are your glasses okay? So his were fine. Mine were bad. So I get up. Excuse me, pardon me.
This is like a sprint to get new glasses immediately.
So I'm down the stairs.
Not only him, but like... Tons of
yeah,
people.
There's, oh, there's at least stampede. 10 or 12 people going, I can't mind. So I go out, these are not working. It's like, really? I said, I swear to you. And so they take another pair. They have to put it over the little tester.
Right.
Okay, these. All right, I'll go. So at least this time, smart enough to stand there at the front.
Right.
I think I've just at the very end of the crawl. So I don't even know what the crawl says.
Right.
So I slap them on. Fuzzy. Nope. Go back. Now, by this time, there are like 3, 4, 5, 6 people there in front of me. And one person is standing there with their ticket going, so are you saying my screening's going to be? And I'm like, I have no time for you. I need glasses now. So yes. I'm the rude guy pushing my... Okay. They test it. These will work. I go, thank you. I go back in, test them. Looks good. Get up to row N. All I can see out of the corner of my eye is Max von frickin' Sydow like intoning this really important thing, and Oscar Isaac is looking all awesome, and
right.
And it's we're not gonna be alone for long. Whatever the line is, little B-88 is around there. Oh, hilarious! Excuse me. Crush some girl's foot, trip over some shit that they can't see because they've got their 3D glasses on. They don't see me coming. I literally fall to my knees into the aisle.
Oh, my God.
Alex helps me up. I plant myself in my seat.
You're like out of breath.
Didn't see the movie. You were in a Lucy sketch.
My heart is racing.
Of course, you're like Brando after Ty. You're sweating.
And I'm like, what's happened? And Alex goes, Luke Skywalker has vanished. I'm like, what? So... The first big battle begins. Poe gets in his X-Wing. He sucks up little B-88 into his thing. There's the you were making a comment about the effects in that first little part. It was like you immediately were like in.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It seemed like the old laser hits the back of the X-Wing, and you see the old sparks that were familiar.
Oh, yeah, old school.
Like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the vibe was immediately like, you're in,
satisfying.
Right?
Yeah, you're in good hands.
All right, so then it's like the X-Wing gets shot. He jumps out. He shoots the stormtrooper, marksman, bam, shoots the second one. The other stormtrooper runs over, has his moment. And by the way, kudos to Boyega for actually being able to act through a frickin' stormtrooper.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yes, like, exactly.
You saw the regret in him through this white helmet, right?
Exactly.
So he's got the stripe of blood across his...
Marked like a Greek god.
Yeah, exactly. Mass training.
So you can see immediately there is regret in his, quote, eyes. And the screen goes black.
Oh, no.
The lights go up.
Was there an immediate, like, just scream or groan? Or what was, like, the audio like?
Well, it was a mix because there were some people who were like, I can see the movie. It's okay. And there were half the people in the theater going, these glasses aren't working. And there are people shouting.
Oh, yeah. During the first, like, three minutes?
Maybe five.
And people were going, start the movie over! Yeah. Start it over!
Yeah, it was just chaos. I mean, because everybody was having a different experience, but we were all delayed, and half the people in there, let's face it, at 10:45, were probably intoxicated.
Of course.
Yeah, and surly at that point.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so lights go up. Wait, what is going on? The guy next to me is like, communicate with us! I mean, there's all sorts of stuff happening now. There's an insurrection building.
Yes.
We've got our own, you know, resistance building within the, you know, there's a group forming up at the top that's going to storm the gates. So finally they come in and say, we need to collect your glasses. And I was like, and the people are yelling, just play us the 2D version at this point. We'll take anything. We'll watch the Clone Wars again. We don't care.
Exactly.
Not that drastic.
So one guy starts collecting all the glasses.
Oh, God.
Oh, this is going to take forever.
One by one.
So Alex starts helping. He's actually out there, you know, thinking, I'm going to help this along. But in the back of my mind, I'm going, this is a trap.
Yeah.
It's a trap. Because the moment he collects every one of the glasses, he turns around, looks up, and goes, all right, you knew this was coming. And we're like, oh,
no.
This screening has been canceled.
Oh, boy.
And
chaos.
That's when chaos. My favorite moment of the night is when somebody who apparently bought nachos threw their nachos at the security guy.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Except,
yes.
He missed.
Aerodynamically, they're not necessarily built to go sailing across the room.
Well, and the G-sauce.
So they hit people in the audience who were completely innocent in this. And it actually resulted in one of the best lines of the night.
Yeah, do you know? Remember it?
It was something like, you know, people were asking, who threw that? And I was like, it was that woman, that loudmouth woman who just walked out. I was like, would she think it was going to hit the guy? And the guy said something like, this is Star Wars. It's a theater full of nerds. Nobody's got an arm that good. That was pretty great.
That is absolutely probably my favorite story this year.
Yeah. It's not done.
Oh, yeah. Jesus.
So we are told the manager will be here momentarily to let you know about refunds or whatever. So we're just like, we're sitting there stunned.
So it's like 12:30 at this point, give or take.
Yeah, certainly.
Yeah, yeah. Like. Yeah, I think so. I think we're closing in on 12:30, 12:15, 12:30.
Oh, Lord.
The manager never shows up. Manager is in his or her office, huddled in a corner, scared to death.
Crying.
Because it's been the shittiest night of her life, their life.
Probably in the fetal position, rocking back and forth.
Yeah. Fire alarm went off earlier. There's, you know, to try and serve all these unruly customers. And there are people walking around in Wookiee costumes. And there's, you know, multiple, you know, Princess Leia bun hairdos going on. And they're like, I wish I was just home in bed.
Yeah.
So we finally get some minion gets in there and yells very bravely, you can go to guest services, you can get refund, blah, blah, blah. By the time we actually crowd out with the rest of the hundreds of people in this packed theater,
right. The
guest services line is already several hundred people long with two people manning it.
Well, yeah.
And right around that time, a very angry person is walking around the lobby at full voice. I need to see a manager. There are only two people. And people are
already. My mother was there?
Wow.
So this is when I look at Alex and go,
Mom.
We're out of here.
Yeah, just
and our option would have been, we probably could have gotten tickets for like a 1 a.m. screening or whatever. So here's what we did. And this will lead to now finally the discussion that we came for. And I'm sorry that's taken so long. But wow. We decided, A, we're not coming back to the Grove Pacific Theaters tomorrow.
Because there will be blood spills. Evil Empire.
Yes, exactly.
Yes, we are going to the Arclight. I'm going to buy tickets for 9 a.m. We're going to get 6 hours of sleep and get up and go. Are you cool with that? And the boy was in. And we did it. It was flawless. And what we lost in having that kind of group, you know, response, because it was a very small crowd this morning.
Yeah.
At least we got on time, good projection, no issues. There was
no like comedic shout outs during.
Yeah. No commentary, which I was afraid that night because of the frustration in the crowd that we would have gotten a lot of.
Yeah,
I mean, we got a little of that
mood
even at the beginning. So anyway, so we did see The Force Awakens this morning.
As did I.
So you saw it with a sparse crowd.
I saw it at 8 a.m. at the Arclight across the street.
And Matt, did you see
the
big crowd?
I saw it at 11 o'clock last night with a completely packed crowd at the Arclight across the street, which was wonderful. Projection's great. Awesome theater over there.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, it was something to see, the energy of that crowd.
That's the thing I may have missed the most, is that there are moments in that movie that are woohoo worthy.
Definitely.
And in our screening, it was quite a sedate crowd, and I believe the only woo-hoos came from Alex and I.
There you go.
Yeah, I think I had the same thing, although to remedy that, I'm actually seeing it tonight, a screening with the Producers Guild, where there will be a lot of woo-hoo people.
Yeah, that's what I told somebody else. They were like, yeah, I'm going to go to one of those early morning screenings, and then I was like, yeah, just pick a night, like go by yourself and see it again with a big crowd.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, yeah, everybody screams. It's like, everybody was waiting in the crowd I was at for all the stars to show back up, right?
Right.
So it was just like, you know, a massive moment when like Han walks in or Chewie walks in or Leia walks in. Everybody just screamed, you know? So that was kind of fun to kind of be a part of that.
Yeah. I still got the emotional kind of personal response to, again, that opening theme, the logo comes up.
Right.
You can't help but get wrapped on it, upped in it.
And
but,
grab your neighbor and celebrate.
Yeah, exactly.
But I remember feeling the same way at the Phantom Menace as well.
Absolutely.
And and over the course of 2 hours, my enthusiasm waning to the point of it actually being the equivalent of your testicles being sucked up into your abdomen when you jump in a cold ocean. It's just like,
exactly.
Wow. But here's what I will say, and I want to go around the table real quick as I introduce people. I was thoroughly satisfied. I loved the movie. I will see it again. I was more emotionally impacted than I thought I would be, to the point of like welling up kind of, and we'll get to those moments. I was very moved by this movie, surprisingly so. I know I wanted to be. I didn't think I would be, and I was really happy I was. And ultimately, give it very, very high marks, and we'll dig into the minutia of it. Matt, what was your response? This is Matt Johnson, everybody, writer, producer, actor.
Thank you. I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. I was really moved by it as well. You know, I thought it was a great reintroduction to the franchise. It finally, when I talk about being in the big crowd where I was at, I could sense nerves from the crowd. Everybody was like, oh, they so wanted it to be good. You know, I think everybody was more nervous, like, oh no, what if it's the prequels again? You know, everybody was talking about that. And like a guy I sat with, everybody was, you know, like chatting as we were going in, just strangers to each other. Guy I sat beside was like, I just want it to be good. It doesn't have to be great. It just has to be good.
Well, I think we all, knowing J.J. Abrams as the fanboy that he is, and seeing the trailers and getting the feel from what we had seen, I think we all knew that it would not be the prequels.
Absolutely,
I think we knew it wouldn't suck. And by the way, Alex and I did a little, we actually bit the bullet and went back and watched episode 1 and 2, couldn't make it to 3.
Yeah.
And those are not good movies.
No, they're not.
I mean, they're just not satisfying movies.
Yeah.
Not to mention the Star Wars universe feels like raped.
Right.
It's like, and we'll talk about that
for
too.
For me, yeah.
But I thought at the very least we would get a good solid action film out of it because JJ knows how to do that. Yeah. But it ended up being more.
Absolutely.
Right?
More for me. I thought it was awesome. It was a great reintroduction to the franchise for me. It was like what you said. It was like welcome back to the Star Wars universe. It's like it looked right. You know, Alex said the sparks. You know, just little things. It looked right. It felt right. The scroll at the beginning sounded right. Mm-hmm. You know, like it did. I mean, if you go back to those prequels and read the scroll, you're like, oh, this just sounds terrible. It looks, you know.
No, look. Hey, the first line we get it when we finally saw the movie and I could pay attention to it. After, the first line in the crawl.
Yeah.
Luke Skywalker has vanished.
Absolutely.
You're like,
whoa, you're already
in. Fuck me.
You're already in.
Just from a pure storytelling standpoint, and I think that crawl was the sure sign that we were in for a good story.
Absolutely.
In that world.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Because it was just, admittedly, it was just plot-driven, but that's what we're looking for. Yep. Yeah. We want to know where these people have been, and to tell us right up top, Luke Skywalker has vanished? Fuck you, why?
Yeah, exactly.
Let's go find him.
Yeah, exactly. And it
and boy do
and it takes the whole movie to answer that question.
Yeah.
Mikey, your emotional response.
I like you, like everybody here, I hoped it wouldn't suck. I'd set the bar very low. I know what JJ is capable of doing, and he can do everything from Star Trek to Star Trek Into Darkness. So you're not really quite sure what you're going to get story-wise. For me, tone is everything. And what it had is it had the tone of the original trilogy.
Right. It felt like the original
story
trilogy.
Was good. The effects were good. It wasn't all digital, thank God. There was real props and real actors in suits and stuff like that.
Yeah, he said early on that for him it was that very delicate balance of kind of the organic there in the moment enhanced by the digital. And again, I think we can all go back to the prequels and say everything felt digital.
Yeah, you just felt so removed from everything in the second trilogy, the 1, 2, and 3. So sitting in the theater this morning, I was just struck by how tonally correct it was. The music was hitting in all the right spots. Yeah. The acting was relatively pretty good, for Star Wars.
Yeah. But just, and it didn't feel all homage-y. It wasn't.
No, they couldn't have gone that far.
Some of the Star Trek stuff, especially in JJ's second one, I think the reboot was a fantastic movie.
Yeah,
I think
agreed.
The second one felt very winky to fans.
Yeah.
And I was a little worried about that. And I think that when you say tonally, and we're talking about how it kind of put us back in that, it didn't feel like it was so loaded with references or visuals or things. It put us back in that universe exactly the way it was created, but not in some sort of kind of knowing or inside way. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. It felt really organic. I mean, I watched, four, five, and six leading into this, and coming right off Return of the Jedi.
That instead.
I watched 4, 5.
I did too.
I watched 4, 5, and 6, and literally, I watched Return of the Jedi last night before we went in.
I watched it last night as well.
Absolutely. And so, coming from Return of the Jedi straight into this, it felt like the same world, as opposed to when you saw 1, 2, and 3. It was like, what world is this? Yeah. It didn't even look the same color.
Well,
or anything.
I give them. I mean, the only thing about the prequels I give a little slack is that yes, we're seeing the past. We're seeing characters we don't know that are going to develop into characters we know. And so that was probably a bigger job than Lucas should have taken on, and our expectations couldn't have been higher. So the advantage that JJ had was he was dealing with people that we wanted to see again, and he was delivering them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Having said that, you're right. That world, Naboo, is this kind of like utopian world that we can't relate to because it's too goddamn beautiful, whereas like I'll just jump to the very last scene that where Rey ends up is gorgeous.
Absolutely.
And kind of the greens are greener than maybe any green I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. But it still felt like an accessible place to me.
No, because it was her in a location rather than on a set in front of a green screen.
Yeah, exactly. And as she said earlier in the movie, I never knew there was this much green in the universe. She had only seen sand around her.
Right.
So
right.
It was interesting to see her throughout the movie kind of go into these more rich lands everywhere she went.
In the same way that Luke did, discovering places that she never thought she would see. I mean, she was basically a mirror of Luke.
Yeah.
Alex, you were right next to me the whole time. Yeah. We did a whole lot of elbowing and
elbowing each other,
grabbing each other's arms. Yeah. I mean, and it's interesting with Alex because obviously I'm the guy that showed him the first Star Wars movies. I don't know if you even remember how old you were, maybe when you saw.
Pretty young. I mean, I've rewatched them a bunch of times with friends and throughout high school and college, and found a new love and reverence for it throughout.
But as a different generation, you and your friends found it and got as passionate about it as anybody else, even though they were those goddamn special edition versions that came out.
Oh, yeah, which you can't even avoid anymore. It's impossible unless you have a VCR.
Yeah, he's killed. He's done a better job of killing the original versions of the movies than he has the Star Wars Christmas special.
Which you can find on YouTube.
Which I do have a very crystal clear copy of on DVD if you're interested.
Wow. Yeah, nobody should be interested in that.
I will give the Star Wars Christmas special one thing. It's the introduction of Boba Fett.
Yes. Oh,
is that true?
That
it's
is
the
true.
First place the first place
I always wanted him some more Boba Fett, I'll tell you.
That is the only thing it has going for it is the first time we see Boba Fett is this Christmas special.
Well, it's
But you also have Bea Arthur.
It's probably
so
Bea Arthur's
sort of...
probably Bea Arthur's finest work.
Yes.
And Harvey Korman, Tour de Force. So as a 20-something, as the lone 20-something in the group, you seemed to be on the same page in terms of an emotional response
to it. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I had all the nostalgia, too, that I could muster up in my 24 years of life, but it was still sorry, but what was fun is that, you know,
it's coming from a childhood and to adolescent thing.
Absolutely.
The same for us. You just happened to see it on a
and
smaller
funny,
screen.
And I watched it through college, which is a whole different sort of experience with the two, a different relationship with
Stoned.
It. Yeah, super, super high.
of course. Yeah, he didn't watch it in THX. He watched it in THC.
The fun thing coming at, from my perspective is that I've been a fan of JJ, and I think that it could have gone too winky, and I was super fearful of that too. But as much reverence as he held with it, the little doses of irreverence that were in there felt really fresh and really nice. I mean,
There were a lot of great laughs in it.
Oscar Isaac makes that joke right away. He's like, sorry, I can't really hear you through the mask. And right away, it's like you get...
Yeah, it was great.
That, just a splash of self-awareness, it never goes further than that, which is really nice.
I was really... Oscar Isaac's character, Poe, at the very beginning, does have this kind of swagger to him that's not quite a Han Solo swagger. It's a different kind of swagger.
Yeah.
And for a moment, I was like, oh, is he going to be the smartass he got? But it was just the right... He's such a good actor.
He's amazing.
And it was just the right touch of... those little moments without going over.
It's the right thing of the character studies that worked in 4, 5, and 6 and didn't in 1, 2, and 3. You came in 1, 2, and 3 with these characters that are apparently already established and knew nothing about, and they never explained themselves. And like what you experience with these characters in this film, they change throughout. You learn things about them because of their environment and how they react to it. And so the saturation comes from the experience, not from a preset sort of, you know.
All right.
So I remember, like, when he said that line about, like, I can't hear you through the mask, and then we start to follow up with seeing some of the other characters, like, introduced to each other, and there were some good laugh lines.
Yeah.
It actually made me relax in the theater of, like, okay, I can laugh. We're going to have some fun with this.
Well, but that was also...
Yeah, it did. Relieved some tension.
That exists in the original trilogy.
Yeah.
And again, we don't have to keep banging on the prequels, but the prequels were so, like, stilted. And I want to... probably give a little shout out to the fact that Lawrence Kasdan was involved. I don't know enough about how much he wrote on this. And for the people who don't know Kasdan, because he really hasn't been high profile as a filmmaker in a while, he was a writer first. He was brought in for Empire and then also co-wrote Return of the Jedi, became a very celebrated director on his own. Body Heat is a freaking great movie, stands the test of time. How brilliant was it that his touch is there? And I want to say that his humor was probably what came through.
Absolutely.
Because The Empire Strikes Back was a funnier movie than the first one.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that a lot of that does fall squarely on Kasdan, and thank God for that. The thing is that I've said, and maybe you even heard me say this 15, 20 years ago when we talked the prequels before, the thing with Lucas is that he is a really good, he's a good storyteller. He's a bad writer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. And not a particularly great director.
And not an especially good director.
Yeah,
you're right.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
He's
100%.
A Look, as much affection as I have for A New Hope, when you watch it with kind of fresh eyes after a while, you realize, wow, it moves really slow.
Absolutely. There's Empire and Return are way stronger.
Yeah. And there's a lot of that one-on-one talking head stuff, which the prequel is almost nothing but scenes of here's an action piece and here's two people talking about the Senate and the trade
agreements.
Action, exposition.
That's what I'm saying. They fill us in instead of let us experience it.
Yeah, exactly. And so I didn't have, I mean, while there may have been a moment or two of drag here and there simply because they had to kind of establish something because I have a feeling things are going to be paid off later on, that sort of thing.
I never
felt like I was going,
it moved like crazy.
Yeah, it was very fast.
For a 2.5 hour movie.
Yeah.
That's a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah.
Stuff.
And
all, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just
so,
the right amount.
So let's just specifically J.J. Abrams as a director, give him a grade. I give him a strong A. You know?
Absolutely. A. For me, the filming was really beautiful. Even in some of the digital shots, like you talked about earlier, just the way he filmed, like the TIE fighters or the X-Wings mm-hmm. coming in, they had his filmmaking technique, like he used in Star Trek so well, that it didn't look so digital. It looked tangible. It looked, you know, it looked really beautiful.
See, TIE fighters in the sunset.
In the daytime.
On a planet as opposed to always
absolutely.
Out. I mean, to have.
And X-Wings over water. Cinematography
nothing
is
sexier.
Wonderful.
Yeah, nothing
sexier.
Beautiful.
Yeah, so that's the thing. We saw familiar figures and familiar flight patterns mm-hmm. and certain things repeated, but in a completely new way.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So great for JJ, Mike?
I give him an A. Yeah, absolutely an A.
And Alex?
Yeah, A, absolutely.
All right, so yeah, strong, strong, strong. And oh, by the way, not too many goddamn lens flares. Thank you.
No.
Seriously.
No.
That's
why he gets the A.
If there was anything,
water on the lens or anything.
Yeah, if there was anything that distracted me incredibly about the Star Trek movies was his need to look like Spielberg's, you know,
yeah,
like
absolutely.
He was shooting with film and using these long. It's like, no, you're doing that on purpose, you son of a bitch.
Yeah.
That's not a stylistic thing. That was a flaw in the technology at the time that just happened. Our eyes don't see that way.
Right.
We don't really see that.
Yeah.
So thank you, JJ, for backing off on the lens.
Absolutely.
Amen that.
Absolutely. And just kudos to him for picking these beautiful locations. It had beautiful cinematic locations in this. You weren't stuck in a soundstage on green screen. You know, you were in deserts and you were in green, lush environments.
Well, that's what brought us back to that original.
To Tatooine.
Yes, because we know that they went to Tunisia. And all these kind of these
of
real places, but they were still exotic to us because we're just lunkheads. We're not going to go to those places.
Yeah.
So they brought us new places that were unfamiliar, so they did feel alien.
Yeah.
But still we could, again, relate to them. I see that that is made of stone. I see that that is moss growing
and
there.
And going to the inside of an engine of a Star Destroyer. I don't know why that was so satisfying.
That was so
that
amazing.
Was awesome. That was spectacular.
I started to know we were in good hands when I started to see all those, like, the down destroyer, you know?
Yes,
like, oh, this is
toes
great.
Toes poking out.
Oh, yeah.
And
she's collecting, like, bits and pieces of metal for, like, some sort of weird, you know, food that grows in, like, a place. It was just, you know.
It's Instabread.
Instabread.
Oh,
yeah.
Dude.
That was pretty cool, actually. I'm like, I want some of that.
I'm ready for that.
Yeah. Me too. Let's go there.
It looked bland and awful, but I want to try it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's like you get a half portion
it's
or a quarter
only thing,
portion.
The only thing they haven't marketed for Star Wars is the Instabread.
Yeah.
All right, so we've gotten into the nitty-gritty of how the movie was made, but let's talk about the people in the movie, because the other great balance here was, yes, we needed to see the people that we knew and that we loved and that we missed, but we also had to have new people to engage with and root for.
Sure.
And I think across the board, Boyega's Finn, they had to, his motivation to become a resistance, you know, to turn away from the stormtroopers seems very quick, seems a little Instabready to me,
mm-hmm. yeah.
but kind of had to be there to be the jumping point off. And as I said, to be able to act regret or disdain or whatever, you know, emotion through a stormtrooper, kudos to Boyega.
Absolutely.
And a little dramatic to have, like, the scar on it. It was a fun way to keep track of who he was.
Yes.
It was pretty clever. It was.
Mm-hmm. We've got Rey.
Daisy Ridley.
She was wonderful.
But killer, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
And let's count
BB-8.
BB-8. The new droid.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that it's going to be the new toy that everybody wants.
Yes.
Totally bought into it.
Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely.
Great
right.
Personality
in.
On
yeah.
that robot.
And the physics of the physicality of it was so
again
funny
a way to be connected to the previous, but to show some kind of progress to it. Right. So. We like these characters. Still, let's talk about that a little bit. Mm-hmm. I mean, their motivations, who they are. Let me just ask questions.
Go.
I'll get your opinion on this. I'll just jump right to the end. Is Rey related to Luke, and how?
I think it's his daughter.
Okay.
Must be.
I think no. I think
really.
I think that would almost be too on point. For even the Star Wars universe, which lives in nothing but coincidence. So I almost think that would be too on point for
well, it brings up a lot of other questions, which is, you know, who's the mom? And
which is, we had that with Anakin back in the day, too. Who's the dad?
Yeah.
And so And you know, any fan of the extended universe knows that you don't have to be a Skywalker to be a Jedi. They, right. There are Jedi of all species and all races, and so anybody can be a Jedi. I think it's almost too. It would be too pat if it were if Rey were a relative or Luke's direct daughter.
But Luke could get in the line. I am your father, and that would just be.
Yes, of course.
Of course. I am your now, because all of us have only seen it once. We haven't had the chance to analyze, right. And I haven't read anything about it because I've stayed away from it. The sequence where she gets taken off, where the Force kind of first enters her, where mm-hmm. obviously that is Luke. I think
yes.
reaching out to her in some way when she touches the lightsaber. So yeah, I haven't had a chance to kind of process all the images we saw there.
Right.
But it is definitely coming from Luke, so that connection is coming there. He must have known about her, has felt her, has tried to get calm down.
Wow.
He's trying to connect with her, I think.
I think so, too.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So anything in those images that we can pull, because we do see, we're seeing her as a child, right? Being left behind.
By her parents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The reason why I thought it was a daughter, you know, if it's not a daughter, I think it's a family member somehow. Because I love the idea that this Skywalker blood is always connected, this kind of like family connections through the Force, all the way from now Ren to Solo and Leia. It's like you can't escape these sort of like family connections. It's right. it's like this bloodline will always be drawn together. You know, it's what draws them together that causes their problems, and what draws them together that causes their strength. And I kind of love the idea that they're all kind of tied together at the end.
I feel like there has to be some Skywalker blood or something in here somewhere, because otherwise, what's the point?
I see that argument. I really do. But it leads to two things. One, that means she's fighting her first cousin when she's fighting Kylo Ren.
Right, which I like.
Which is kind of interesting. But also,
believe me, this has been all about family issues.
Yeah. So it
also means that the Skywalkers in general can't recognize any member of their family unless they're standing right in front. Because Luke doesn't know that Leia's his sister.
Right.
Darth Vader doesn't know in A New Hope that Leia's his daughter.
Right.
And then you have Leia and Rey having a good hug at the end of this one, and not knowing that that would be her aunt.
Yeah.
So these Skywalkers, they need to have a reunion or something.
And we know that
there needs to be a family photo. Yeah.
They're a little distracted, let's face it.
And we know that Luke was also training a bunch of different Jedi at some point before they all dispersed or were killed. So there must be other, you know, family members with Force in them that she could have been.
Yeah.
Sire, or, you know.
The other thing that, you know, just let me throw out there, because it popped into my mind too. What if she's related to Kenobi? Because we do have the wonderful Jedi mind thing that she does on her own without ever being able to be taught it.
Ooh, I like that.
What
like
if
that
she's
too.
Related to Kenobi somehow?
I like that.
Yeah, we know very little
Absolutely.
Kenobi history
we do.
Between the prequels and
sure.
New Hope, right?
He was out there on a desert planet, you know?
He was... Let's face it, he was a bit of a player. He was a looker.
He was.
Yeah.
He loved going to the cantina.
All right, Kylo Ren. Everybody in?
Adam Driver. Yeah, no, in for the Kylo Ren. Adam Driver, not a great actor.
You don't think so?
No. Very bland. Very distinct facial features. The mask was better.
Now that his face got effed up and like he'll be kind of scarred and stuff
that'll
in
help.
Future ones,
yeah.
that'll help.
He's a little too pretty.
Yeah, I know in the theater I was at when he took off his helmet the first time, people kind of snickered.
Well,
you know,
we're so used to seeing him with
looking guy.
We're
you know?
So used to seeing him with facial hair that it was kind of like, wow, he is strangely androgynous and in a weird way.
In a strange way too, you also get a little hint of Anakin. You know, what's the actor's name?
Hayden Christensen.
Hayden Christensen. A little bit of that sort of poutiness in him.
He's definitely got that petulance.
Yeah, the petulance. That's a good one.
I didn't necessarily think his acting was weak. I actually enjoyed him and the character. I just here's what I liked about Kylo Ren: the right up front recognition of the conflict that he is going through. He's not specifically we saw it with Darth Vader, but over the course of time that he went from training to be a Jedi and whatever we like think about the prequels, he had a transformation there. He became this dark, evil overlord and then saw the glimmer of the light that was with him. With Kylo Ren, we start out with, I'm conflicted. I feel the light. I'm trying to fight it.
Yeah, and that's an interesting take that he's being pulled towards the light, not being pulled towards the dark, which I did like.
And he's not the most powerful guy in the room.
I wish we saw more of it, honestly.
Absolutely, yeah. I think for me, you know, once...
So are we all in agreement that he is not dead? He's going to be back?
Absolutely.
Yeah. He's alive.
So, absolutely.
Yeah, obviously.
He's on the other side of the cataclysm, the ravine.
The cataclysm? I think it's a chasm.
Oh, chasm.
Yeah. It was a chasm.
A catechism. A catechism?
He went to catechism?
Yeah.
Catechism?
He didn't look Catholic to me.
That's a Snape.
Snoke. I think it's Snoke.
Snoke?
Our villains were... Well, here is the one thing... I'm kind of jumping around here, but here is the one thing, if I was going to be nitpicky and point out any flaws, is that I feel like we're... so much familiar territory to the point of we're mirroring maybe a little too much. I mean, we already had one Death Star, and then we had a second Death Star.
Yep.
So now all we've done is just kind of make everything... I mean, I love the line of that Han Solo had about... what was it? Oh, it's bigger?
It's bigger.
It's a sunny...
But it's another planet destroyer.
Right.
And there's also another flaw that they find. And they kind of whatever. So, and also, Darth Vader is an underling to, you know, somebody else who's kind of running things. But and also, we have a combination of the commander guy, and we also have the, you know, all-powerful... dark
spooky
lord
chair,
dude who is the only character that I'm kind of sitting there going, oh, where'd he come from? Now I assume we'll get more backstory
and
more will be discovered about who that is, but they just kind of expect us to kind of... And here, I guess what I'm wondering is, could there have been a lead up to this? Obviously there could have. Did we need to jump in at this point in time? I almost kind of would have liked to have seen Kylo Ren becoming who he was necessarily. But maybe that's just because I wish the prequels were better, and that's basically the same storyline, the apprentice turning dark, and if they could have done it better. So I that's highly nitpicky because I love the movie, but... Did we need another planet destroyer? Is that the only way to go here?
Well, what do you? How do you get bigger than that, though?
It also destroys multiple planets.
I
personally like that, but like I can tell how a lot of like Star Wars fans are going to be nitpicky about that. I even said last night, I said, if anybody's going to be nitpicky about this movie, like my cousin Scott, who already texted me this morning like 17 times about this. It was the same thing. It was like, well, it's the same movie. It's the same movie. And I'm like, it's not the same movie if you really look into it, but I can see how if your expectations are really super high, you're going to go, well, it's kind of the same thing. But you know, I personally don't feel that way, but I can see where that criticism is going to come from. I think they were being a little neutral and reintroducing the universe.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I think I maybe it was a negative review, but the one, I think it was a Variety review that said, you know, the film was able to bring back all the familiar aspects and make us happy to see them, but didn't. And this may be just too much, too ambitious to think about, didn't give us the new wonders we were hoping for. And I think that's impossible to do. I mean, I think we can all agree the first time we ever saw Episode 4 was unlike anything we had ever seen. I mean, I saw it in 1977 as a teenager in a theater, and there had not been anything, I mean, not anything like it in my young lifetime, and even since then, the feeling that I had of the people in the theater and how we reacted and when it was over, and even now looking at the flaws that movie had in the slow spots or whatever, I was so willing to overlook that because I was seeing something completely new.
Absolutely.
A new hope.
I remember earlier this year.
And that's going to be impossible to reproduce.
Yeah. I remember earlier this year, I worked at a Star Wars convention doing a piece, and everybody was talking about how most like younger people now come to Star Wars through the Clone Wars, that cartoon series or whatever. So I actually wondered like, you know, how much talk was coming into this movie about also reintroducing this franchise to a new generation that had only kind of seen the cartoons and had
the whole universe.
Absolutely.
At their
disposal. That's why I thought maybe while some things were familiar to us who literally can quote it and know all the details
from the movie specifically.
Absolutely. I thought it was super entertaining, but also could have introduced this awesome franchise to like brand new people who may have only knew some things about the cartoon or the comics or whatever,
right? Right.
Yeah. You know the Lego game or something like that. Yeah, but right. Now they get a great Star Wars movie to latch onto for their own. So I'm also wondering how much of it is made for a new audience and not just for all of us.
Yeah. Okay, let's get right to it.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pass the tissues.
Did Han Solo need to die?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oof.
Is it okay that he died?
It was tough.
And I will tell you this. That was a grab onto my son right next to me moment.
I'm sure.
I even kind of felt it coming.
I saw it coming, but I also just heard something recently. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, let me ask this. Was Han prepared to kill his own son in that moment?
No.
No.
No way.
Okay.
No. I think even Han knew.
He saw his own
bit.
Death, maybe.
Absolutely. I think when he walked out on that platform, he knew.
He's coming home or I'm dying.
Did Kylo actually have a struggle in that moment, or was that the plan all along? Did he have such resentment that it was easy for him? Was he asking Han to kill him?
No.
At any point in there?
No, I think it was all luring his dad.
It was all
in.
A ruse.
That's, that's what I think. And it was a horrible moment. I mean, my theater screamed out like
mine
people
too.
Screamed
it was
out.
Rough.
And in a movie house, just as a fan, I mean, it was just a gut-wrenching sort of moment to see this. Because it's also not just the way the saber goes through him. It's the way he falls into that abyss. It's like he's gone from our lives forever.
It is impactful in that way. And I'll tell you, I think it had to happen for two very good reasons. One, in this day and age of the way we view our entertainment and the take The Walking Dead, Lost, anything that we get, Game of Thrones, anything we get caught up in, it's almost kind of standard operating procedure now. We have to lose a character we love.
Absolutely.
I think it was the right character.
Yep.
I do. I had a feeling it was either going to be. I actually thought maybe Finn was going to die, like they were going to introduce this new guy and you were going to love him and then they were going to take him out. But it made more sense as we went along that it was going to be somebody that familiar. And here's the other reason. Harrison Ford finally received the sweet release of death he had been hoping for since 1977.
Well, that's what I said. I said stylistically, we all know Harrison Ford didn't want to keep making these movies.
Yeah, right. He asked to be killed.
Early, I think he did.
He wanted to be killed at the beginning of Empire Strikes Back.
Right, absolutely.
So he gets that. So in that way, it's also kind of weirdly satisfying.
Yeah.
Tell me about other moments that you can think of, if you can remember them, other moments that gave you that charge, that you yelled, that you grabbed on to whoever was next to you. I had a good three or four of those, and if I can get one of those in a movie, I'm pretty happy.
Absolutely.
I had three or four moments of true adrenaline rush, either overt sadness or melancholy or excitement and joy.
The first dogfight on Jakku where Rey takes over the Millennium Falcon, not knowing that she's piloting the Falcon.
Awesome.
And they're going,
way they
and they're going through it. The they're going through the destroyed Star Destroyers.
That was a great reveal too.
Great reveal.
Yeah, and just the way it was shot and with a couple of really nice throwbacks to the original movies in terms of, you know, the tail gunner and stuff like that. And just that whole dogfight had such magic. The way it was shot so well.
Yeah.
And
it wasn't too chaotic.
You know exactly what was going on.
Yeah, some of these
and
things.
Some of the angles of that, like, you know, seeing the Falcon do a side slide.
Yeah.
I mean, just some really cool, almost like Fast and Furious type moves out of the Falcon that would not have been technically available to Lucas or Mark Wand or Kasdan 30 years ago.
Right. But they didn't overdo it.
I mean,
it was it was another instance where they did it just enough to kind of heighten things for us, but without, like I say, making it so big that we've just, I mean, it's kind of like if you've ever tried to sit through any of the Transformers movies, it's like, oh my God, there's so much crap going on.
You can't even see it.
I don't know what I'm looking at or who's doing what. I never got overwhelmed.
Oh, absolutely. That was great. It was like the Millennium Falcon versus two TIE fighters. Mm-hmm. That was it.
Yep.
You know, it was just like we knew what was going on. I could see it. I could follow it.
Yeah. Yeah, who else had, there was a gotcha moment that really kicked your ass?
The first lightsaber battle was pretty satisfying to me, and there was something fun about
specifically. What do you mean
with Finn and Kylo Ren?
Yeah,
there's something about that. Maybe this is me getting sort of actively about it. There's something about the difference in their physicality of their skill sets with the saber that was super exciting to me. Watching someone really clunkily swing one around.
Well, I felt the same about Rey too. I felt like during Rey's duel that she was getting progressively stronger, mm-hmm. and that's really interesting tough acting thing too, which is I'm just going to be stabbing away at it, but I've got enough inherent skill to defend myself. But she got progressively better as she opened herself up to it. Let me ask you, Alex, as long as we're talking about Finn, and we can all weigh in on this, I feel like there's more to Finn than just, maybe that this is what's been bugging me about him, because again he has that turn and we see that at the very beginning, and that has to set things off. That's a plot point that has to happen. But he's such a good marksman. He's so good in the Falcon. He's such a good sharpshooter. He handles the lightsaber relatively well. He's very courageous, and it's all based upon this idea that he's turning away from something. Obviously, he's been trained as a stormtrooper, so he's got some abilities, but we learn he was a janitor, basically.
Right.
Is there more to Finn?
Well, did you guys see, I thought it was going to come up in the film, and it didn't, but did you guys see the Toys R Us toy spoiler?
No.
Did you guys hear about this? Tell us.
Well, I didn't bring it up because I thought it was going to be in the movie, and I didn't see it there. Oh. I was like, oh, but it might come back later, but apparently
hold on. Do we want to hear this?
It's already out there.
Okay.
I mean, you guys should probably start taking stats.
By the time 3 years comes, that new movie comes out, I'll have forgot it.
Yeah, me too.
I'm drunk now.
Exactly. I mean, it's probably crossed most everyone's minds, but there was a toy that came out on Toys R Us that said, like Finn, what was it, whatever his last name, or the whole name, and in parentheses said Lando's son.
Oh!
No!
Motherfucker, why did you tell us that?
Fuck.
Yes,
excuse my language. Wow.
You asked for it.
You might have to go back and erase that, Larry.
Wow.
God,
you'll
damn
never
it.
Erase it from our memory.
I shouldn't have said anything.
God,
I'm sorry.
Damn
did
it
really not even dance in your guys' minds?
Did not.
No.
Whoa. And the only reason it's in your mind is because you're a horrible racist.
Or because I just rewatched all the films. But yeah, I'm horrible.
Damn.
But he does say, though, that he was plucked from, like, you know, never even knew his parents.
Yeah, and that could be their racism, or their, you know, it could be
that could be Toys R Us being. Let's just say Toys R Us is.
Yeah, let's just say Toys R Us is dumb.
Okay, Toys R Us, you are racist.
I mean, that's the only thing that theory has going for it. That's the only thing.
I do think his story, there's more to be told, because for me, if somebody will flip once, they'll flip again. So, you know, I wonder if there's going to be some conflict later on down the line.
I do like the fact that they brought in this idea, because the stormtroopers were these just kind of neutered, you know, things. We never, you know, people really got up in arms. Not so much about the fact that it was an African-American male, although people had their stupid comments about it.
Sure.
But the fact that a stormtrooper would take his helmet off. And I thought that was, in a weird way, kind of a brave thing to do in this universe.
Yeah.
And to actually give a little bit of sense that they're not just these eunuchs, you know, that they are actually, they're trained from birth, you know, it's kind of like Russian gymnasts.
Yeah, they become more human over time.
Yeah, and the fact that they still have the ability to even make that you know, comment about, you know, we could have gone with an army of clones.
Yeah.
With a little kind of, you know, throwback to the frickin' Attack of the Clones crap, probably. But the fact that they are relying on programmed human beings, but that they have, you know, flaws still.
Yeah.
Flaws.
I think it's the right way to go, absolutely. Yeah.
What else? Anything that stuck out? I want to kind of talk about the ending last.
Right. I got one, though.
And I want to conjecture.
Okay.
Completely shamelessly and irresponsibly conjecture.
Okay, well, I got one, but Matt first.
I got just, you talked about moments that kind of moved me. I was really moved in the, I guess the, her name is Maz, the owner of the new canteen or whatever. I was really moved at the end, the scene underground whenever Rey has just found the lightsaber or whatever. Yeah. And she has that beautiful monologue kind of getting rid of this stupid midichlorian crap and going back to what the Force was, yes. where she's like, it's all around you. It's here. It's there.
Well,
it's
that's a direct line,
she's
right?
She's the Yoda yeah. of
Absolutely.
This episode.
Yeah, Yoda had that Absolutely. Beautiful monologue in Empire Strikes Back where he explains what the Force is. We got away from it in 1, 2, and 3. And I had said, I want us to go back to what... Yeah, the midichlorian counts. I want us to go back to the beauty of what the Force was. So when she delivered that monologue, that was a definite hair on my arm moment of like, we're back to what the Force is.
Great. Yeah, absolutely. Because it was a direct lift
absolutely.
From Yoda, right?
Yeah. From Yoda's Empire monologue.
Or Obi-Wan. Or did Obi-Wan say...
No, it's Yoda. Yoda.
Okay. It's Yoda, yeah.
And it gives her that permission later to take control of it herself. She, you know, we don't hear like the words come back over, you know, looming over the sound to be like, it's in all of us. But she figures that out, you know?
Yeah. That's right. Oh, that's true.
Absolutely.
They could have easily kind of brought some... voice in it could have been Luke's voice
those
or somebody
everything, everything. That, would, yeah. that would have been too on point also though yeah. because she yeah. hadn't met any Jedi yet so she
right.
wouldn't
exactly.
know that she would you know you suddenly start hearing voices in your head.
I love the moment she found out things on her own.
Oh yeah.
Oh, I got a great trivia
trying
thing.
It out.
I got a great trivia
well
thing.
I tell you I mean before we mine for me was that scene with Kylo and when you see him and that to me actually was a very good acting moment where Driver pulled it off mm-hmm. is that he's not immediately showing his frustration. He's actually trying to hide the fact that he's being blocked and or that he is frightened. It's I think it's subtle enough until she says, you're scared or you're frightened, and that she was able to fight back. And he could not have ever expected that. He doesn't even know that Absolutely. She has the Force
you're
in her until that.
You'll never be Vader.
Yes.
Yeah, that was a great line.
To me, man, that was one of my favorite.
So good.
Yeah.
Of any action sequence, the whole thing, that was a beautifully brilliant written moment,
yep.
and I loved that Rey's character got to be that.
Yeah.
Where were we going?
For me, I can tell you what I think I love most about this is, and it's is that the real hero is a woman in this one.
Yep.
It's not a guy coming to rescue the woman. Rey, and this is what's really cool. It's like growing up with my friends and you know Halloween costumes. Oh, I'm going to be Luke Skywalker. No, I want to be Han Solo. Han Solo's cooler than Luke Skywalker. Rey is both of them now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She gets to have the lightsaber. And pilot the Falcon.
Yeah,
right.
yeah
I
yeah,
mean,
yeah.
come on! Yep.
And
it doesn't get cooler than that.
And they don't
Jedi
over.
Smuggler.
They don't overplay her toughness either. It's not like she's not some sort of constructed tomboy yeah. figure.
The only thing felt slightly overwrought to me is the "don't grab my hand" joke that happened twice. If I got it once, it would have felt. It would
I
a little.
I didn't mind that. I didn't mind. Yeah, I think that okay. was a little kind of. Hey, quit being sexist moment, and yeah. I think that was fine.
Which is great, yeah. But
I think it's a little character establishment, but sure. but yeah, I mean, they hammered that home a little
Daisy
bit.
Daisy Ridley just walked that fine line, Michael, of what you just said, I mean, about like being able to show us that strong character without like going over the top. Like mm-hmm. she moved really well as a Jedi.
Yeah.
You could believe that she could be a pilot, that she
yeah.
could do a lightsaber.
Yeah.
She looked really natural
she's not a
in
big,
the role.
She's not a big Amazon.
No, not
I mean,
at
she's
all.
She's a
no.
slight woman.
Yeah, not at all.
And they even played into that where like she can't quite reach over to the co-pilot's
oh, yeah,
side
yeah.
you know she's like she's tiny-ish
yeah.
but I never for a minute felt like she wasn't tough enough
Such
or wasn't
cool
strong
character.
Enough really brilliantly done
yeah
right?
yeah yeah absolutely
so at the end I was as close to tears as I've been in a long time in a movie
yeah.
I mean I felt when she comes to the top and I didn't think it was going to be as satisfying as it was, I thought it was going to be frustrating that we weren't going to get Luke. And I think it was actually smart enough of them to make it very clear with Luke not being in the poster
mm-hmm. yeah.
and only a hand being in the trailer that we were set up for, oh, we're not going to get a lot of Luke in this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
this was Harrison's
yep.
farewell. And that's, again, pretty
be.
Brilliant.
Pretty good. Well done. Absolutely.
And in addition to that, the fact that there is a reveal and there is this kind of wizened, weathered,
mm-hmm.
bearded,
almost
you know,
grizzled.
Yes.
Yes. This is a very different Luke
Absolutely.
Than we have
His
seen.
Eyes
he's
so,
become Obi-Wan.
Yeah.
And
Absolutely.
I'm getting chills just talking about
yeah.
it.
I don't think he's become Obi-Wan, though, because Obi-Wan always had a twinkle in his eye. There was
right.
always a little mischief.
He definitely looked sad.
In both the Ewan McGregor and the Alec Guinness one, Obi-Wan always had a twinkle in his eye. There was no twinkle in Luke's
no,
eye.
No, Luke's conflicted. Obi-Wan was resigned to his life. Luke's going through some shit.
Mm-hmm.
There's some deep yeah. stuff going on there. And when she comes to the top and hands that lightsaber over to him and they have that moment, I was ready to spill tears.
Yeah. And we don't know if he's going to take the lightsaber. All she does is hold it out. You know, yeah, it ends with just her holding it out. You know, he doesn't reach for it or anything. I think that's what will be answered next is what does Luke do with this?
So there we go. That leads us to, I guess, the final round here. What's next? What do we think? Other than the fact that obviously Finn is Lando Calrissian's son.
We speculate.
Damn Toyara's arm.
Look, this reminds me of... when did Empire come out? 1980?
80. Yeah.
All right, so I'm in high school, all right? I'm older than everybody else in the room. I'm in high school. This is 1980. There is no internet. There's no nothing. I mean, we were still driving around in steam-powered cars, okay? There was no way of communicating with people.
It doesn't sound awesome. Yeah,
What was just called Star Wars had been out for a few years. Everybody had gone crazy on it, over it. And the nerd universe, the nerd black market had sprung up. Odessa, Permian High School, Bruce Banner, that's literally his name. I'm not kidding. He was given the name, the original name of Dr. Bruce Banner in the Hulk.
Nice.
His name is Bruce Banner, was part of that like world. He was in the dark, whatever, the dark web that existed at the time, and somehow got a hold of the script for Empire Strikes Back.
No way.
And came to lunch one day, 2 weeks before the movie came out, and came up to our table and went, "You're not going to believe this, but Darth Vader is Luke's father."
Oh, no.
And here's what the reaction was like. It was like, oh, what? And then we look at him, it's like, oh, no, it's fucking Bruce Banner. And we're like, and then we start thinking about the movie, and we're like, oh, that makes it. And then we're all looking at it, and then it's like panic's like, fuck you, man.
Oh my God.
Yeah. That moment I didn't get to have in the theater.
I remember that moment vividly.
I do too.
And coming up with every other possible way of thinking that, no, there's no way. There's no way. Vader's a liar. But then, you know, even being 11 or 12 at the time, thinking, you know, Vader may be a lot of things,
right,
but he's not a liar.
Exactly. I remember when
there's still a nobility about him.
Yeah.
So, with the risk of being the Bruce Banner in people's lives and destroying whatever might come next, what do we think Episode 8 will be?
I think we'll probably get some of the Kylo Ren backstory, presuming he survived. Which
flashbacky, in a way?
Well, maybe a little flashbacky. I would like to see...
It's never really happened that much.
But we kind of need to figure out why he's decided to go dark. What happened in the intervening years?
Right, it happened during Luke's training,
yeah.
And it's obviously one of Luke's biggest failures is that he was not able to take his sister.
Seem to go through that problem.
Yeah,
so
they need to get better instructors at that school.
Yeah. Better
get Snape or somebody like that. Yeah. Snape or Dumbledore should be able to do it.
So it's obviously the next episode is going to be very Luke heavy.
Yeah, I think that's This was Han's episode. That's Luke's episode.
Yeah. I think we're gonna see Luke training Rey, and very much in the same way this one ended with the Supreme Leader. Is that his name Supreme Leader?
Commander, whatever
the Supreme guy,
right,
saying, "Hey, bring Kylo Ren to me so I can finish his training."
Yeah, Rey will try. Yeah,
yeah.
Rey is gonna look to Luke as her Yoda, basically.
Yep.
But he's gonna be a reluctant trainer. He's gonna resist.
Yep.
He's finally gonna give in because he realizes he has to because she's potentially going to save things.
And we're going to see a kick-ass Luke lightsaber fight against somebody.
Against somebody.
Somebody.
What about this figure that's Supreme
Is Leader,
that Andy Serkis, by the way?
Yeah,
I
have the IMDb up here. Supreme Leader Snook.
Snooki?
Snooki.
Snooki. Wow.
Supreme Leader Snooki.
Snook.
That's going to be the new reality show on MTV. Supreme Leader Snooki reality show. No, there's Snoke.
There's more to him, obviously. We know zero about
him. Is he really that big? No, I'm being
serious.
That's
the thing. That's the reveal.
Is he really that giant? No, because it was a projection.
Yeah.
So it's like, is that his real size?
He's going to be a tiny
like a demigod?
Yeah, or when you see him, is he going to be a normal size? Yeah.
I think he's probably a normal size.
He's normal size.
I would hope. Because that,
yeah, that's a Toys R Us toy.
Stop it with the toy.
That is the one thing that I'm a little wary of, is that for so long we've known that there are, and we don't know necessarily that, or maybe we do know that Kylo Ren isn't Sith.
Yeah.
But and there have always been two Sith, a right. master yeah. and a servant.
Right. right.
Good point.
So is this Supreme Commander Sith? Or is
right.
this,
Where did
is,
he go?
Or is this yeah. something new? Because right. only the Sith can tap into the Absolutely. Dark side. So there's some unanswered questions.
Yeah, where did he come from? What was his? Where did his dark abilities come from? Who right. was his master? Yeah.
All right, so we'll get some of that.
Yeah, we'll get some of that.
That's pretty much it. Yeah, you know, Leia. You know, Leia's around.
She's
you
sad.
Know. She looked good in the movie, though. She looked good.
Yeah,
I thought she looked really good.
Yeah, yeah, agreed.
I know she was complaining about like all the weight loss and everything. You know, if you saw like her little press tour, she's like, "Oh, they made me lose so much weight." She looked great. I thought she looked great. She sounded great. I thought yeah. she was really fantastic yeah. in the movie.
Well, we obviously all had a similar experience, and it was extremely satisfying considering what. Massive expectations are on this thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Satisfying Absolutely. Is the key word. Yeah.
It will be picked apart. It will yep. be, but it's, you know, they're gonna have more than enough money to make several more. We're going to have plenty of spinoffs. Here's what I kind of love about it. It. You know, you can get a little too deep into it, but I love that there is this story. I mean, the whole idea of the Force, which, like you had mentioned, Matt, and we got away from the scientific aspect of it into more kind of the philosophical aspect of it. I mean, what better time in the world for something like this to come out talking about the draw of the dark versus
absolutely.
The light? I mean,
amen. Yeah,
I think maybe that's what's moving me the most is that what it shows is that, and I think it, and they did this in the first trilogy, that good and evil, as much as we would love to think that it's that black and white, so to speak, it's not that there is a draw to both sides. I think
and
that
we
all have the yes. ability to lean into one direction or the other. And with all that's going on in the world
one
right now,
one direction's in the movie.
No, yeah. no,
they were in the cantina
theme,
scene.
They do the theme song.
Yeah. Oh, the reggae cantinas,
yeah.
cantina song.
How great was it that they basically kind of gave us a new cantina
yeah,
and
good.
Actually
exactly.
made it really fun? Yeah.
But reggae,
yeah, yeah.
okay.
So. That Lin-Manuel guy, the guy who did Hamilton, he wrote that.
Oh yeah,
yeah, exactly. Well, I got another great trivia thing. Can yeah. I do that before you wrap up?
Yeah, I've got. I'll add two more to okay. that.
Great trivia thing. So the stormtrooper. Do you know this one? The stormtrooper. You know, whenever Rey, you know, does the Jedi mind trick on the stormtrooper and makes him mm-hmm. Take off her chains and then drop the gun.
Right.
You know who it is?
I do.
You do?
I do.
What?
Daniel Craig.
Whoa. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's excellent.
Now, did you guys know where Simon Pegg was in the movie?
No. Somebody said it, but I didn't know.
I forget his name. It was the guy who was riding the half beast, half like helmeted cyborg monster
who was
trying to take
who had BB.
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 Oh, and
Simon Pegg?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
That was great.
Also, okay, BB-88. The voice credit goes to
Bill Hader
and Ben Schwartz.
And Ben Schwartz.
Yes.
Oh, nice.
And
I'd love to see the behind the scenes on that stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
The nonsense they're saying.
And from episode number one of Snark Monkey, as well as the Clone Wars, listed in the credits of Star Wars The Force Fucking Awakens, James Arnold Taylor.
Yep.
A fellow snarker.
You mean the voice of Titus from Final Fantasy X?
Yes, that yes.
Is that who you're talking about?
He yes. texted me earlier. He was hoping to be here, but he did tell me that, and this confuses me, and maybe you guys can tell me what this means. He was various voices.
Oh, okay.
Various voices.
Stormtroopers, people in the background, and he said something about he was supposed to be the voice of Obi-Wan, but they had Ewan do it.
Oh.
Wait, now, when did Obi-Wan come? I don't even remember.
Now, that's what I'm wondering.
Maybe it was in that flashback. So much happened in her yeah. little flashback scene.
Seriously.
You need to see it again to
but he
notice
said,
all
but,
the
but
stuff.
But Ewan didn't get a credit. That was his final comment. So, yeah. So, obviously, for many reasons, we all got to go see it again.
Yes.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
I'm seeing it again tonight.
Absolutely. Right,
yeah. Well, guys, thanks for the special edition.
Oh, thank you.
If you can say those words, connected to Star Wars. Yes. Sorry.
Exactly. Exactly. Our special edition without all the terrible effects.
Yeah.
Well, may the snark be with you guys. Matt Johnson, where can people find you?
Boom. You can always go to my website, mattjohnsonprojects.com, and check out my new podcast, getnewfrequency.com.
Yes, absolutely.
Which Larry's done.
Mikey, Blind Reviews, still going strong?
At Blind Reviews on Twitter and on House Hunters about once every 3 weeks.
And yep. Alexander Morgan, alexandermorganmusic.com, yes. the new album For the King,
yes.
which is fantastic.
It's all about Star Wars. Actually, there's a song on it called Rancor. which has nothing to do with the Rancor monster. Wait, that's from that's from Star Wars.
Yeah, that is.
All right,
Jedi.
Yeah, yeah.
Why don't you just say it is?
Yeah.
All right. And
yeah,
how's that? How's that new song coming, Professor Supreme Leader Snork? Is that going to be a good song?
Snork. His name's changed 9 times since we've been here.
I don't know.
Harry Crocker.
I think we could all agree that he is our least favorite character in this movie, and he better step up in episode 8. I'm telling you right now. Gentlemen, thank you so much.
We'll do it again in 3 years.
Yes. See you all then.
I do not want to see you until then.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
All right.
Get a monkey.
Get a monkey. Get a monkey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.